What could be funnier than debating the pros and cons of the delicacy known as the Hot Pocket? How about living with five kids in a two-bedroom, fifth-floor walk-up apartment in Manhattan? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Comedian Jim Gaffigan made his name doing stand-up shtick about being a single guy in New York City. Now he's a married father of five, and his comedy has changed almost as much as his life. He's written about life with five kids under the age of eight in the new book, Dad is Fat. I'll talk with him this hour. And it is our summer membership drive. Please do your part by calling 800-971-8815. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Jim Gaffigan is a stand-up comedian who lives in New York City. He's probably most famous for this bit about Hot Pockets.
I'm moving a little slow tonight. I had a Hot Pocket for dinner. Good to see I'm not the only white trash here. I buy the Hot Pockets. I go in grocery stores, I'm like, yeah, I'll get these. I've never eaten a Hot Pocket, and then afterwards been, I'm glad I ate that. I'm always like, I'm gonna die. I paid for that? Did I eat it or rub it on my face? My back hurts. Ow.
But Jim is more than just the Hot Pocket guy. He's also a father of five and author of the new book, Dad is Fat. He'll be visiting Iowa on Friday doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble in West Des Moines Friday at noon. And he's with me now. Hello, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I mentioned you live in New York City, but I think it's important as we talk about you, your life with your five kids, to understand where you live in New York City in a two-bedroom apartment.
Yes, it's a two-bedroom apartment, but it's not even that nice. It's a five-story walk-up.
So and, no elevator.
There's no elevator. I have daydreams about elevators, but we live in a two-bedroom with five children, and you know, people always ask. You know, it's not some self-imposed challenge. It's just the fact that my wife, who gets pregnant, looking at babies. She's been pregnant over the past 8 years, so you can't really turn to a seven-month-old pregnant woman and say, I mean, a woman that's 7 months pregnant and say, let's move. So we've been kind of looking and trying to calculate when we're going to move.
And not only is this a two-bedroom apartment in New York City, it's a two-bedroom apartment in the Bowery?
Yes, it's on the Bowery, which is where they make the homeless people. And we're at Houston and Bowery. And to put this into some context, the term hobo supposedly comes from a description of the kind of characters that existed at the cross-section of Houston and Bowery, which is where I'm raising my children. So the term hobo was invented where my kids, you know, ride their scooters.
Has the Bowery gentrified somewhat since we found it popularized by the term hobo?
Yes. I mean, it's, you know, obviously my children's safety is of the most importance to me. So, but it's still, you know, it's filled with a cast of characters. Patricia Fields, who was the, you know, the clothing stylist on Sex and the City, and most of her employees are drag queens. They're downstairs next door. But I love New York City, and I love the fact that, my children are exposed to, you know, such an eclectic group of people. I love the fact that my son at one point in the Starbucks asked me if the woman in a burqa was a ninja. I like that stuff. You know, it's fun.
Let's talk about before you had kids. And a lot of us knew you before you had kids because, of course, you were doing stand-up comedy. And your shtick was kind of as the single guy living in the apartment, eating your Hot Pockets. When you were that guy, did you think about becoming a father?
I think most people, I mean, you know, you're right. 10 years ago, I could barely get a date. And now my apartment's crawling with babies. So I had a romantic notion of getting married, but I was very comfortable with the idea of being the odd, weird uncle that lived in New York City. I'm from the Midwest, so I was kind of the weird uncle living in New York City, but, you know, life changes. And, I mean, I love my life. Being a dad is the most important thing I'll do in my life. But I didn't foresee having five kids. I didn't really even foresee getting married, but I'm very happy.
In our office, a bunch of us have kids, and then there are those that don't. And whenever those of us who do talk about our kids, those who don't say things like, wow, I'm not sure I ever want to do that. So when before you had kids, you write about an experience that you had visiting friends who had just had a baby. And that trip really sounded like it would be effective birth control for a long time. What did you see before you had kids?
I spent most of my adult life being the guy without kids, and I did not have a background where I interacted with little kids, whether it be, you know, babysitting or a camp counselor. And like your coworkers that don't have kids, people with kids, it sounds like we're in a cult. And I have an essay on that. And, you know, because all the positive things, it just sounds like people with kids are constantly complaining. And we are, but that's not to say that we don't enjoy it and that we don't find fulfillment in it. But when you don't have kids, it just sounds like someone, you know, like, oh, last night our baby kept us up till 3 a.m. To a person without kids, it just seems like, well, why would you subject yourself to that? And why would you repeat it? People without kids, there's an understandable confusion, because you can only understand the insanity of parenthood when you have kids. And I'm generalizing. I mean, there are people without kids that get it. But for me, when I didn't have kids, I just assume that it was just, you know, you're giving up your life when you have kids. But now I realize that it's, you know, I love being a dad. It's pretty important. But even when you don't have kids, it sounds like I'm lying. It sounds like I'm rationalizing, right? It's like that person with a really long commute. You're like, they're like, oh, it's great. I only have to drive an hour and a half to work. So that's what people with kids sound like to people without kids.
Well, you write about that when you write about it being like a cult, that we're constantly trying to recruit other members.
Yeah, it feels like we're recruiting other members. You know, and I did this essay where I compared the attributes of a cult and how they overlap with the characteristics of parenting. You know, and it goes beyond the absence of sleep and being poorly dressed. You know, it covers every, you know, the cult members only talk about their leader, which would be the kid. The cult members lose interest in communicating with their friends. You know, the cult members end up moving to be with other cult members, which would be the suburbs. So it all lines up perfectly.
Well, and you talk about how parents sound like they're always complaining. And in your book, you write, you know, we say some really horrible things, but I think at one point you said something about when you get an infant, or when you have an infant in your life, you get some sort of card that allows gallows humor instantly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm on Twitter a lot, and Twitter really opened up. You know, I'm an observational comedian, so when I'm doing an hour show, I might talk a little bit about my kids, but I understand not to make my whole show about being a dad, because that would be unappealing. But so Twitter was this outlet for me to talk about parenting. And I got a lot of feedback from people that enjoyed it, but there were random people that were kind of complaining. They're like, oh, you make parenting sound horrible. But when you are a parent, I do believe that if you're an involved parent, you should be complaining, because there's a lot of sacrifice, and you have to have a sense of humor about it. A couple weeks ago, I went to a birthday party on Saturday at 8 a.m., you know, that's not even in the book. And there's something, you know, who's having a birthday party at 8 a.m.? You know, like, I expected to get there and, you know, it would be like a Taliban birthday party. But that's some of the insanity. And so when I complain about that on the internet, people will say, well, you make parenting sound horrible. And I'm like, no, it's amazing. It's just these just absurd realities of parenting that are just kind of hard to comprehend.
Well, and I would love for you to read a little bit from your book, because becoming a dad is different than becoming a mom. And one of your essays is about that, and it's called Vice President. Would you read that for us?
Surely. As a dad, you are vice president. You are part of the executive branch of the family, but you are the partner with the weaker authority. In your children's eyes, you mostly fulfill a ceremonial role of attending pageants and ordering pizza. I'm never the first choice. My kids don't even mask it, which I respect them for. Let's see, the crabby guy with the scratchy beard or the warm, soft lady that tells us stories for 8 hours. It's not even close. Jeannie is Bill Clinton, and I am Al Gore. She feels their pain, and I'm the dork reminding them to turn off the light. I'm always Joe Biden saying the wrong thing. When I read a story to my children, I know how Dan Quayle felt when he spelled potato wrong. Most dads know they are vice presidents and are fine with it. Being president mom is a position outside of our pay grade or skill set. We can't breastfeed, and we wouldn't know how to braid hair anyway. Other times, we dads are presented as the enforcer vice president, the Dick Cheney. If you don't listen to me, I'm going to tell your father. Suddenly, the lame duck dad is Darth Vader. I don't know how kids keep it straight. They must think, so if we don't behave, you'll report our behavior to the guy you yell at and boss around the house. Well, that's not threatening at all. Most of the time, I don't even care about the crimes my children have supposedly committed while under my wife's watch. However, I'll still put on the stern father face. Your mother told me you were climbing on furniture, and when she asked you to stop, you didn't listen to her. Is that true? My children will act apologetic and frightened, but it feels false, because in reality, my children don't fear me the way they feared my father. When I have discipline talks with my children, it almost seems like we are shooting a scene from Growing Pains. Occasionally, decisions are gratuitously placed in the Ask Your Dad category, under the pretense that your opinion is valued. But you know better than to go against your president. Yeah, sure, why not? It's absolutely fine with me. Unless your mom didn't want me to say that. In that case, absolutely no, I forbid it. That is when you realize you not only have no idea what you are doing, you also have no principles. You have become the God help us if something happens to the president, vice president.
Jim Gaffigan reading from his book, Dad is Fat. And you reflect a little bit on the evolution of dads. And I think all of us know that being a dad, the position of dadhood has changed a lot in the United States over the past couple of generations. But when you think about growing up and your dad, and you think about the dad that you are, what do you think about? What are the things that strike you?
Well, I think it's amazing. You know, my father and my father's generation, I describe them the pre-Phil Donahue or pre-Dr. Phil kind of era. And it's not so much that they didn't do anything. I mean, my dad always looked like he was about to go and play golf, or he was returning from playing golf. That might have been the outfits that they wore. But my dad, you know, it's not so much that my father's generation didn't do anything. I mean, they, you know, so really the responsibility of a dad a generation ago was to bring home the bacon. And by that, I mean, they're not even bringing the bacon home or shopping for it or cooking it or even putting it on the table. They're eating the bacon. It's not so much that my dad's generation didn't really do anything when it came to parenting. It's that they didn't feel guilty. I mean, my dad didn't feel any guilt whatsoever. And I have a summer sling for a baby and a winter sling for a baby, and I still feel guilty. I mean, right now I'm doing this interview, and I'm away from my kids, so I feel an incredible guilt. But even when I fly back home and I'll be with my kids, if I'm doing a certain activity that is not intellectually constructive or not healthy, you know, the consumption of healthy food, I feel guilty. But then when I am feeding them healthy food, I feel guilty because they're not enjoying it. It sounds pretty ridiculous, but...
And you compare it to Catholic guilt. This is much, much worse.
Yes. I mean, I'm Catholic. My wife is a Shiite Catholic, so she's very Catholic. And I was raised with a certain amount of Catholic guilt, which essentially meant you felt guilty for feeling good, you felt guilty for feeling bad, you felt guilty for not feeling anything. And, you know, you're supposed to deal with this by going to confession, but then I would feel guilty because I didn't really ever confess my whole all the things that I had done wrong. And so then I stopped going to confession, and I felt guilty about that. Anyway, there's Catholic guilt and there's Jewish guilt, but really there's nothing that I was prepared for, which is the parental guilt. And it's just this overriding deep thud that you carry with you that I don't think as a kid, you don't imagine that your parents have this overriding guilt. It's because parenting is a strange equation. It's, you know, it's horrible hours and it pays worse. But the equation of parenting is you sacrifice and do all these things because you love your children. But the odds are that when they're 18, they might talk to you maybe twice a year. So it's a strange thing. But the guilt is you want to do it right, not to get all Khalil Gibran. But, you know, you don't want to mess up a kid, you know.
I'm talking with Jim Gaffigan. He is a stand-up comedian. He's also the author of the new book, Dad is Fat, about his life with his five kids in New York City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest this hour is Jim Gaffigan. He is a stand-up comedian. He is probably best known as the Hot Pocket guy, but he is now the author of a new book called Dad is Fat. And this is about his life with his five kids, his wife and five kids, in a two-bedroom, fifth-floor walk-up apartment in New York City. Jim, where does this title come from, Dad is Fat?
Well, Dad is Fat is the first sentence that my now seven-year-old, my son Jack, when he was five, he was writing on a dry erase board. And as you know, they do very simple kind of words, you know, cat and mom. And my son's first sentence that he wrote was, Dad is fat. He showed it to me, and he knew that I would laugh. And then I put him up for adoption. So it all works out.
When you're writing about your kids, do you think about some of the other comedians that have done parental humor before you? I mean, Bill Cosby spent a lot of time talking about his kids in his stand-up and has written books about it as well. And Louis C.K. is famous for talking about his kids now. Do you think about what they've done?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely influenced. I think Parenthood, Bill Cosby's book, had a huge influence on, I mean, the premise of his book is very similar to mine, except for I have much more of an approach of, I don't know what I'm doing. Whereas I think Mr. Cosby's kids were older. And also talking about my kids in my stand-up and also in this book, I definitely wanted to, I knew the type of book that I didn't want to do. I didn't want my book to be, I hate my kids, and I didn't want my book to be, I worship my kids. You know, I wanted to find a middle ground, which is I love my kids. I love being a dad. I'm humbled by the opportunity, and I just don't know what I'm doing. So, this book is very much, I'm an observational comedian, and so I kind of looked at parenting and fatherhood from, you know, the same point of view that I looked at Bacon or Hot Pockets, which is this kind of mystical kind of just find it, you know, look at it from every angle. And having five kids, I had five opportunities to look at pregnancy and five opportunities to look at giving birth and five opportunities to, you know, look at breastfeeding. So as an observational comedian, I really kind of got an advanced degree in these topics. Of course, my oldest is nine, so I'm going from the assumption that when they become teenagers, it gets really easy.
I'm sure you're right about that. I hope you are. Well, you also write a little bit about the kind of parenting school you and your wife subscribe to. And, you know, there are many different kinds of parents, but you already mentioned you have a summer sling for carrying a baby and a winter sling for carrying a baby. So you are among the baby wearers. Attachment
yeah.
parents. You also, your wife gave birth to all five of the kids in your apartment at home.
Yeah, I mean, my wife is, I'm a big believer in home birth, but I mean, it was pretty much an evolution for me because I was, you know, I'm not someone who, I'm a lazy guy. I mean, my comedy kind of is a romanticizing of gluttony and being lazy, but my wife is amazing. And, you know, we do, all our children, my wife gave birth to all our children in our apartment. You know, the home birth thing is strange because I'm not somebody that really even enjoys eating at home. It was an evolution. And, you know, some of the home birth thing that I find so fun is that it almost seems as if people are uncomfortable even when they find out we've had our kids at home. There's usually a response of, oh, that's, you had your baby at home. Yeah, we were going to do that, but we wanted our baby to live, you know. So there's, and I, you know, I think midwives are really, it's a heroic profession, particularly given that, like, the societal belief is that home birth at present is kind of a strange thing. But we do believe in attachment parenting, which essentially means your kids are constantly with you. There's different, you know, there's sleep methods of getting your kids to bed where you just kind of lock them in the room and they go to sleep and they scream. But we, you know, being followers of attachment parenting, that involves you lying down with them, reading them stories, talking to them, and eventually just begging them to sleep. So I always describe attachment parenting is, another way of describing it is, dad is uncomfortable parenting, because the kids always end up in our bed. And it, again, I love it, but, you know, that's not to say that anyone enjoys getting a foot in the face at 6 a.m.
Right. Well, you describe putting kids to bed as terrorist negotiations.
Yeah, very much so. It's like the reverse of a hostage negotiation. So it's like, look, we know you have demands. Just stay in there, and we will meet your demands. You know, what do you want, a helicopter to Cuba? We can do that. Just stay in there and don't hurt anyone.
You have done comedy bits about growing up in a large family. You mentioned you're from the Midwest. You grew up in Indiana, and you're one of 6 kids, right?
Yes, I'm the youngest of 6 kids, which really only prepares you to be to hang around exhausted adults, really. So it's, I like the big family thing, but I always kind of say, you know, it's the only thing I knew. You know what I mean? It seems like everyone from big families always say, yeah, big families are great, but there is something, you know, it's like people from the Bronx brag about being from the Bronx, and people from Detroit brag about being from Detroit. I mean, it's like you're going to have an identity to how you were raised. And I like big family stuff. It's just, there's a certain amount of chaos. And it is amazing that I'm repeating it, because, you know, I always describe my childhood as, it was great, but there was a certain exhaustion that my parents had. It was kind of like the last half hour of brunch buffet. You know, there's just a little, you know, some of the enthusiasm of the guy running the omelet station has kind of dissipated.
We were talking about how the roles of dads have changed. The roles of moms have changed, too. I mean, if you're practicing attachment parenting, and you're a lot more hands-on than your parents were.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my dad, again, it's every generation, we're kind of figuring this out, right? I mean, there's different, you know, the news is always filled with some other type of parenting. You know, there's the tiger mom and stuff like that. So, I mean, my wife is very much, I mean, some of it is the attachment parenting. Our apartment's so small, but I just enjoy kind of being involved with parenting. I think parenting is kind of, I describe it as like forced selflessness that has really kind of made me a better man. I always describe, you know, each of my 5 children has made me a better person. And based on that, I only need another 34 to be a decent guy. But, you know, you can't be selfish if there's a baby screaming at night. You can't just be like, well, I don't feel like getting up. You have to get up. And, you know, you want to get up. I mean, you're tired. But that's what, for me personally, it's this forced selflessness of parenting that I think has been one of the profound impacts on me.
With each subsequent pregnancy, how does the way that people respond to the pregnancy change?
Well, it's been, you know, first of all, there's something very interesting about our culture and how we respond to pregnancy in general, because by society's standards, there's no perfect time for a woman to get pregnant, whether she's single, married, has a kid, or is 18 or 43, you know, which I think is really amazing. But when you keep adding children, you know, obviously there's a societal kind of standard of 2 children, right? And, you know, we live in New York City, so 2 is kind of like 8 in New York City. And so when we kept adding children, you know, I used to have a joke about how people would respond. You know, people look at me. When you have four, people are like, wow. But when you have five, people are like, just stop. What are you, creating your own nationality? Is there going to be a country called Afghanistan? And so, but it's kind of fun how people respond. And I think that there's something really interesting about how, you know, we have broken the mold. So people will ask, are you guys done yet? And I always think, you know, not to sound defensive, but it's like, why would someone care? You know, it's not like I'm turning to them to pay for their college education. It's like, you know, they're not going to have to babysit. They're not the ones that are losing sleep. So there's a strange thing where I think in our society, whether someone has a kid or whether someone doesn't have a kid seems to be everyone's business. You know, we all have friends that have wanted to have kids and they've struggled. Yet a stranger would never ask them when they're planning to get their haircut, but they'll ask them, when are you guys going to have a kid? So it's strange. I mean, I'm not trying to sound defensive. I just think it's an interesting societal dynamic of our culture.
Well, I have friends that have three kids. I have a friend who has four kids, and they've told me that with each subsequent pregnancy, the questions, the responses of strangers get to be more intimate. You know, for example, if they have two girls and they're pregnant again, it's, oh, trying for a boy. Or,
right.
Or if it's the fourth baby, really? Did you do this on purpose?
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting. And, you know, I wonder what causes it, because that response. Because, you know, I'm in my 40s, and when I was growing up, there were people with big families. And, you know, I described big families. They're kind of like waterbed stores. They used to be everywhere, and now they're just weird, right? And so there is something about, I described it when we had four. You know, of course, I did this special, Mr. Universe, with four kids. And I thought, wow, I have a big family. And then we got done with this special. My wife and I, we write everything together, and we found out Jeannie was pregnant again. But when I had four, I used to say that people find out I have four, and they look at me like I'm Amish. They're just like, well, that's one way to lead your life. You know, it's just, you just seem like an oddity. But I don't know. I'm somebody who goes on stage and makes strangers laugh. So I'm used to people thinking that I'm kind of an oddity.
Have you found your audience shifting as your life changes? I mean, you're not necessarily just talking to the same young people who are eating Hot Pockets at 2 o'clock in the morning anymore.
There's definitely, you know, my audience is people that like my comedy. I feel like it's expanding. I don't think that, I always love the fact that at my shows, there was some level of diversity. Like there would be the lesbian couple sitting next to the Mormon family. I always liked that. But I think that my audience, you know, there is something about a shared point of view of being a parent that has attracted other parents or people with larger families. But, like, we know there's not that many people with large families, so that's just kind of a small grouping. But I don't know, the thing that I love the most, that I'm most surprised about by this book, is the number of college students, which, you know, when I'm doing theaters in different cities, most of the audience is college students, that they're reading the book and that they identify, that there's a belief that they know my comedic point of view, and it might be a topic that they might not be ready to start a family, but they're going to enjoy the point of view. So I'm pleased by that.
Well, you mentioned how big families are even more rare today than they used to be. And even among Catholics, in your bit about being from a big family, you always said that you had to say six kids Catholic, and that explained
right,
it away.
Yeah.
And of course, even among Catholics, families aren't always that big anymore. So how do you think your kids will explain it?
Yeah, well, you know, the whole thing, you know, in the essay, I always say, I don't care how they explain it, as long as they don't say 37 kids Catholic. You know what I mean? There is something. I mean, I love having this big family, and I'm open to having more children. But there's a certain level of, you know, I'm frazzled and overwhelmed anyway. So, but I, you know, I don't know. I think that there's just, you know, there is a point where, I mean, we're not trying to compete with the Duggars or whatever. I've never seen that show. We're just kind of living our life. And, you know, my wife is, we are Catholic, so there is no goalie. But I don't expect that we're going to have 12 or anything like that.
You mentioned earlier the kind of parental guilt that you deal with as a father of five. How do you handle it when you're on tour? How does your wife handle it?
Well, we make a point of, I mean, I'm very lucky because I can do theater shows and versus working at a comedy club. When you're in a comedy club, you can be in the city for out of town Wednesday to Sunday. But otherwise, and we've been learning as we're going, you know, I make a point of not being away from my family. You know, I'm doing this bus tour, so I'll be gone from my kids for 5 or 6 days, but they're meeting me in Milwaukee. And, but other than that, we construct our schedule where I'm only out of town for maybe a day. So I'll fly, say I was doing a show in Cedar Rapids. I would fly into Cedar Rapids and I would fly back the next day. And so, and otherwise we also do a summer bus tour where we bring all the kids and put them on a bus and the bus picks us up in New York City and we drive across. We went through Des Moines last spring break and went to Zombie Burger and stuff like that. So it's great. You know, it's like I do a show a night. And, but there's definitely an effort to make sure that, you know, personally, you know, it's like I want to be an involved dad. And if I have the luxury of making sure that I'm involved, you know, I'm not in the military, so I have some control over it. And I have turned down some movie roles where I would be in Alaska for 8 weeks to say 5 lines. You know, it's just, you know, it's not worth it to me.
And your wife works with you. I mean, she worked with you on the book, but she also works with you with your comedy, right?
Yeah, we do everything together. It's complete codependency. There's an ongoing, constant conversation. I mean, the book is very much a partnership. And all my stand-up, I'd say for 10 years, we've been writing everything together. And she's been editing and rewriting and coming up with lines. It's just this ongoing conversation about my comedy and the material that we're putting out. So, yeah, it's a great partnership.
So between her work and your work, do you also cram a nanny into the two-bedroom apartment?
There's no, I mean, believe me, there's a big belief in help. You know, we have a lot of help. And there is some juggling of, you know, just pickups and drop-offs with so many kids. So, yeah, we have help. We definitely have help. But my wife is a bit of a Wonder Woman. I mean, I kind of describe her as... you know, she has the energy of Napoleon, who supposedly only needed 3 hours of sleep a night. I mean, it's baffling. And I'm a lazy guy, so I'm not as lazy as my act would indicate, but I'm not the morning guy, you know. But we definitely engage in hiring some help, and it's a necessity.
So you refer to in the book a number of times how people identify you as the Hot Pocket guy. Hey!
Yeah.
That's you. Has that started shifting? Hey, you're the guy with all those kids.
Well, you know, it's interesting how you really have no control over what you're going to be known as. I mean, I had this joke about manatees, and I was known as the manatee guy, you know, probably 10 years ago. And so, I would love to be known as the guy with 5 kids, but Hot Pockets and Bacon, you know, I certainly, I was in an airport last night and someone yelled Hot Pocket at me. And I never know how to respond. I don't know if it's a compliment or an insult. But I always just say, thanks, you know.
So you're going to be in Iowa on Friday. You ate at Zombie Burger last summer. But you actually have some Iowa connections, right?
Yes. My mother is from Fort Dodge. My grandfather ran for governor of Iowa. I don't know, in like the 40s or something like that. But there is, my father's from Illinois. My mom's from Iowa. And, I grew up in Indiana. So, and I've done shows in Iowa numerous times. And I don't know, there's something, it was fun to have my kids in Iowa because there's a county that has my mother's maiden name. And so it's you know, there's a romantic notion associated with Iowa in my family. There's something about Iowa that holds a mystique. And you know, I don't know, on our honeymoon, we went back and I performed at the Iowa State Fair, which was amazing because I think, this is how I remember it. I actually, you do stand up and sometimes you'll open for a musician, but I'm pretty sure that I opened for Kyle Busch's NASCAR. So I was opening for a car. Like, I did stand up and then they just wheeled out a car and people looked at it.
And you were on your honeymoon.
Yes, and I cut short our honeymoon so we could go there.
I hope you bought Jeannie something really nice on a stick.
Yes, I did. Well, you got to do the corn dog,
So you write about always looking like an outsider in New York City because you're from Indiana, but you've lived in New York City for 20 years and you are definitely living the city lifestyle with the tiny apartment and crammed in there. What keeps you in New York?
I love New York. I really do. Maybe it's because I'm a low energy guy, but I'm a very white bread guy. I joke around about, I grew up in the Midwest and I went to New York and that's when I realized how Midwestern I was, because of course to the East Coast and the West Coast, when you say the Midwest, they just imagine Little House on the Prairie, right? So, but I love New York. I love the eclectic diversity. I like the fact that my children are kind of exposed to socioeconomic, just a lot of variety that I love. But mostly I think I love New York's energy and the convenience. I love the fact that I can lie down with my kids, get them to bed, and then 10 minutes later I can be on stage trying out stand-up. That's pretty amazing in my book.
Jim Gaffigan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, and enjoy your trip to Iowa.
I will, thanks.
Jim Gaffigan is the author of the new book, Dad is Fat. He is a father of five who lives in New York City. And he will be in Des Moines on Friday doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble in West Des Moines Friday at noon. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Hungry kids in the crib, ma.
Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot.
When the cravings got a hold of you.
Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot.
And your munchies get an attitude.
Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot. Pocket like it's hot.
I've got the pockets in my arms setting off smoke alarms. And I eat them smoking hot because I got it going on.
Yo, I'm a hot dude with some hot dreams. Getting fired up. Letting off steam. Everybody showing love. Herbie's in the tub. Checking applications for the Hot Pocket Fan Club. Pepperoni pizza much better than some fish heads. Interior too hot, let's cool it off for a few secs. I'm running for the taste, that could be my fizzy. Jumping Hot Pockets, that's how you get a hissy. Hey, yeah. Winners get the meaty meats, winners get the cheesy eats. The tag team meal that's too hot for TV. Get off my pockets, you gotta back up. Yeah, that's what's up. Now sign the prenups. Me and Hot Pockets is never gonna split up.
Never gonna split up.
You should think about it. Take a second.